Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeta, Evan Basilek, Russell Young, and Sujeet DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information, should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is December 20th, and this is episode number 209. We're going to be talking about DevOps and Kubernetes, which I swear for the audience, we planned this to the nth degree to make sure that this was just a couple shows after we talked about Kubernetes. Those of you who are regular audience members know what a load of line that is. So we've got a couple of guests. We've got Dan Garfield from CodeFresh.io, and Jessica Dean from Microsoft Cloud Developer Advocacy Group. Kale and I are going to go through kind of some intro stuff as far as new announcements. If you have anything you want to contribute, feel free. Otherwise, we'll get to you guys in just a minute.
Brad.
Kale, you want to this is great. So do you want to talk about the negative of Bitcoin here today? And blockchain, after we've been talking about blockchain all these weeks?
Oh, no, there's ups and downs. That's a roller coaster. And to be clear, again, we're not involved in cryptocurrency. We are involved in the business and enterprise aspects of blockchain that are super awesome. But yeah, no, there's a lot of pros and cons and bad things happening and good things happening out there. But in general, the blockchain stuff is super healthy. I think it's an awesome thing. And I'm actually in Arizona this week working with a customer right now on some stuff with blockchain. So
yeah, I'm just giving you a hard time. This was actually on, I heard it on NPR. And what they were talking about was I might have read this on Fortune Straight. I can't remember now. But basically, they were talking about one of the challenges with some of the blockchain stuff. And this is specific to the Bitcoin mining side of things, right, is that they consume a ton of energy because electricity is the single biggest cost with this stuff. And again, this is true for cloud stuff in general, right? Energy is the driver for the economics for a lot of this stuff. I mean, hardware is certainly part of it. But this is why you see data centers in places like Ireland, because it's cool, and they can use natural cooling and the like. So I put that in here because I thought I'd just give you a hard time about it. But we only do the positive stuff.
This isn't my section or anything, but I got to tell you, I think you'll be entertained by this. I gave all my extended family $5 worth of Bitcoin 2 years ago for Christmas in like Christmas paper wallets. And they all looked at me like I was a nutter. And I said, look, just hang on to it, put it in a drawer. In a few years, it'll either be worth a ton or it'll be worth nothing.
Yeah.
And in the last month, all of them have been hitting me up nonstop. Where was that wallet you gave me?
What do I do with this thing?
And they're like, is it like worth $2 million? Like, can I buy a house now? I'm like, well, no, it's like, it's worth a few hundred dollars now, but come on, guys.
That's so awesome.
They're getting up like crazy.
Yeah, that is awesome. Okay, so any of my family that's listening, you will not be getting chunks of Bitcoin for Christmas this year.
Sorry. You can still give them a chunk, a fraction.
A really little chunk. So, okay. So the other thing, so we talked, I think this was last week this came up in the show, where we were talking about the show Silicon Valley and how they try and – I did some digging on this. Apparently, they try and be very accurate in how they represent the IT industry. And one of the – we were talking about one of the episodes, they talk about using up all their Azure credits. So I spent some time last week and dug this up. We'll put this in the show notes because I actually thought it was really cool. But in Season 4, Episode 8, the Keenan Vortex – there's a scene where one of the characters, and I don't watch the show, so I'm not even going to try and talk about who's who, walks up to the other character and says, hey, have you guys looked at our Azure consumption? We've just used up all of our credits. Our egress is going through the roof. And they show an actual screenshot of the Azure portal egress outgoing with this massive spike. So I've got a screenshot of it that I dug around and found. I've got some links to HBO Go and Amazon that's got it, and got the, we'll put the timestamp for it, but it was awesome to just see. It's like, I may have to seriously consider going to watch that show if I can get my family to talk about Azure without making fun of me. It's just, they're not IT people, so sometimes they just don't get it.
Nice.
Yeah. So other than that, so I don't have any other announcements, Kale. It's been kind of quiet as we lead into the holidays. I don't know if you do.
Yeah, there's a couple things out here, some stuff that's in preview now and some other things. So like the one of the things that stuck out to me was the Azure Data Factory. There's some apparently there's a V2 of Azure Data Factory. And I used this early on when it was kind of early days of Azure Data Factory. Super, super awesome tool for doing data transformation, intake, that kind of thing into the cloud. And it looks like I remember originally there was like a handful. I think it was like three or four kind of input connectors, you know, to bring data into the Azure place, or Azure storage and, you know, the like. And now it's just like exploding. It looks like I looked at this list and I'm like, holy crap, there's so many of these now that we're making it super easy to kind of connect up, you know, even things like accounting software like QuickBooks and things like that. That's
wow.
Super cool.
Yeah, I think I saw somewhere, we may have to go do some digging to find a PM or somebody, but I think I saw that we, not too long ago, Azure Data Factory picked up the ability to run SSIS packages. And so I think that's probably, some of that's like driving that, like this is going to become SSIS in the cloud, and so that's why you need all these connectors and the like. I wonder if it'll still run the old DTS packages.
DT exec, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I have run that many, many a time.
Yeah, and then a couple others. The security center. There's a nice blog post up here by one of the security engineers talking about kind of like Azure Security Center is a product out there that's like a PaaS service that allows it to kind of watch your infrastructure that you have running in the cloud, and it uses things beyond just the normal, you know, static list of, well, make sure they don't have weak passwords and make sure that ports aren't opened and things like that. I mean, this is going way beyond that, and I think this is to the credit to the cloud, you know, at scale when you're running these type of workloads, you know, we're getting attacked constantly. Evan can probably attest to this, but like,
yeah,
it's quite a, probably would blow people's minds how much the attack vector is here. And so we have tons of data on like what people are trying to do. And obviously, at scale, we can bring that back to all the customers and help to guard their infrastructure as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've had a number of cases over the years where somebody was, you know, being DDoSed, and you know, they, you know, the platform was fine. You know, we had, you know, if it's at a scale to hurt the platform, our stuff kicks in. But there wasn't anything I could turn on for that customer, right? And so, security center is bringing those kind of things. So yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and the last one I just wanted to touch on was so there's an alert preview for Azure Monitor, so the Azure monitoring services. And, you know, this is what I think I call these one of the unsung heroes in Azure. You know, the whole, it's not really something people talk about a lot other than the fact it's like electricity. Like, we just assume that it should be there. How can I make sure that I monitor and set alerts and send emails and trigger those people when certain things happen? And to the team's credit, they've done a good job of, over the years, kind of making this easier to use, bringing it into more consolidated views, giving you more options for how you can actually, you know, take advantage of this data and be able to be, you know, in the know on anything that's happening up there that might be interesting to you. So it's something to take a look at, I think. This is like a core service that enterprise always asks for, is we need to have a solid monitoring, alerting kind of infrastructure.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. Okay, so I guess with that, let's get to our guests. You know, Dan, Jessica, whichever one of you wants to go first, could you kind of introduce yourselves and tell us what you do and you know, where you're from, and then we'll kind of get into the conversation there.
So my name is Dan Garfield, and I'm a full-stack engineer at a company called Codefresh, which is all about basically a DevOps platform built for Docker and Kubernetes. And I do all, a lot of our external communications, evangelism, marketing kind of stuff.
Great. Thanks. Jessica?
Yep. So my name is Jessica Dean. I'm a cloud developer advocate for Microsoft. I work on a team called the League of Extraordinary Cloud Developer Advocates, or
awesome.
LOECDA. It's actually cool. You can hashtag that on Twitter, and you will actually get our entire team. It will ping every single one of us. Which there's five of us total, and we will all come rushing to your aid, whatever topic you have. We usually focus very heavily on Azure, obviously. My personal passion also happens to be my job, which is really great, but I get to focus on open source Linux container orchestration as it applies to both DevOps and Azure.
Great. Well, thank you both for coming on. You know, this is we definitely appreciate it. So talk to us. I guess, Dan, we'll kind of start with you. You know, talk to us about, you know, we talked about Docker and Kubernetes a couple weeks back on the show. You know, talk to me about kind of what your company does that kind of layers on top of that and kind of the why customers like it and what they use it for.
Sure. So for those that are coming into Docker and Kubernetes kind of fresh, there's a lot of stuff that really changes pretty dramatically when you adopt sort of a container-centric infrastructure. And part of that is that instead of change, like certifying a change set, so if someone commits code and they push it, you know, they want to get it tested and then, you know, merged and then pushed, well, you can actually, instead of testing a change set, you're now testing a Docker image. And that Docker image has a lot more associated with it. And you can actually go beyond that and say, well, I don't want to just test my Docker image. I want to test like my full stack application with all of my different Docker containers. And how do I do that? So that's really the problem that CodeFresh solves. I call it the day two Kubernetes problem. Day one is like, hey, how do I get a cluster up and running? How do I maintain it? And then day two is, well, how do I actually start deploying stuff to this? How do I actually test it effectively? How do I keep track of what images are rolling out and when? How do I, you know, handle different deployment strategies? That's really where CodeFresh fits in. So we've designed our platform kind of specifically for Docker, specifically for Kubernetes, specifically for Helm, if you're familiar with Helm. And we've done that. So there's sort of a pipelines element where you have these Docker native pipelines. And this is kind of interesting, but basically each step in a pipeline is its own container. And so if you want to have a pipeline that uses like Ruby and .NET and Java, you don't have to have like a single environment that has all that stuff. It's a container native pipeline. So each container can run its own thing. And then the next layer to that is we have this built-in registry where when you're working with an image, and you want to see, you know, normally images are sort of black boxes. Like,
that's
what
the whole point,
where does image
right?
come from? Well, it's the whole point from the perspective of running it, but not right. from the perspective of moving it.
Oh yeah, no, right? That's true. Right, the person who's actually creating it probably needs to know a lot about it. The person who's using it shouldn't really care. Good point.
Yeah, and if you're debugging it, like what change went in? So if you're looking at a problem and you're looking at what containers are running, you might want to know, well, like what change went into this container? Like what's the git diff associated with this container? And like what tests did it pass and who worked on it? So all of that stuff is sort of this metadata that we layer on into the built-in registry so that it makes collaboration on images a lot easier and then self-serving that information for, you know, your engineers. And then the third element is exposing all of your basically providing environments so that for any change that you're making, we can actually spin up your full stack application on demand for every single branch. And then you can test it and share it with your team or whatever you need to do so that you basically have sort of ephemeral staging servers for every branch, every commit that you can move on with. So that's kind of the landscape of where we fit in. And we, a lot of times we get compared to because of a pipelines thing, we get talked about for our CI element, but really we're a DevOps platform that kind of goes end to end, but it's all specifically for Docker, all specifically for Kubernetes. I mean, we have people using ECS and stuff, but that's the people that are really excited about us are people that are kind of decided that they're going to go all in on container.
Yeah. So, go ahead, Kale.
Yeah, two things that are sticking in my mind just working with containers and not even Kubernetes as much as just Docker, but like when we talk about the first one was around like just building like your Docker containers. It's the typical workflow that I've been through is we build a Docker recipe, which kind of has like metadata describing like what we're going to do inside of our container. But then it's some of these can be like pretty time sensitive to build. Like I've had some that takes 15, 20 minutes to build to put everything together. So is there anything that you guys offer in that respect on the build pipeline? And then the second piece is around like the tooling. How do you fit in with existing? We work with a lot of enterprise customers who have, you know, Jenkins, VSTS, all these different kind of CI tools right now that you mentioned. Do you guys fit in? Do you replace those? I guess, how do you work with those?
Yeah, great questions. So the first thing, if you're building Docker images, there are a lot of things you can do to optimize that flow. And so I'll tell you kind of what we do by default inside of Codefresh. If you decide not to use our platform, you can kind of try to replicate this yourself. But one of the things we do is we actually keep, when we execute a build pipeline, we pull in, we basically keep a persistent volume. So we attach that persistent volume when we create the container. So that means that if we're building a container the second time with some changes, we basically cache all the layers associated with that image.
Nice.
So if you only made a small change, now all of a sudden your build time is cut way down. Another thing that we do, so I mentioned that we have this built-in Docker registry. There's a couple of reasons we do that. One of them is that we can layer on this metadata, but I think Jessica mentioned before the show, we integrate with like the Azure container registry too, right? Like we integrate with any container registry. We're happy for you to use your own. And there are a lot of reasons for that. But one of the reasons we have one built in is that we basically have the build server connected to the internal registry by like a direct fiber line. And so, so we're able to, basically pull any dependency stuff super fast. So those things help. And then, maybe another thing that I would add on is that if you're using like, multi-stage builds, you can kind of go about it two ways with Codefresh. One is, you know, we're going to cache everything that goes into that multi-stage, but two, you can actually execute extra build steps inside of the pipeline itself for a greater level of caching and kind of control. So those things make a really big difference. I mean, in most cases, when we basically bring someone onto the platform where they haven't done any optimization, they'll go from like typically like 24 minutes to like 2 minutes, right? Wow. Just because of the caching is there, and it makes a huge, huge difference.
That adds up over time, right? Because typically that's a dev sitting there staring at the screen waiting for this stuff, right, to spin up so they can do the next phase of testing, right?
Yeah, totally. And you'll get a kick out of this. I was at a really well-known, large, super hot tech company in San Francisco. I won't name who they are for reasons that will become apparent. And I was over there visiting a friend for lunch, and I was looking at this engineer next to him, and he had two computers on his desk. And I said, wow, this guy must be like the all-star coder. Like, he's using two keyboards at once. Like, man, he must be amazing. Why does he have two computers? Well, it turns out it's not because he was coding on both at once. It's because every time he would make a change and commit it, it would build on that machine, and it would just be useless for the next 40 minutes. So then he'd just move over to the next machine. And wow. It was just like blew my mind. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is so painful. Let's have a build system. Let's optimize that build system, and let's optimize it for what you're working in. And so, you know, a lot of people will spend time like optimizing for like Java, right? But if you're working with Docker, you now have a whole different set of optimization you're going to do to speed up that build process.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of the first time I saw the demo of the, I guess it's, and I'm probably going to get the names wrong. Jessica, you might be able to step in here, but the new Docker service we have where you get like the, I mean, like instantaneous containers that spin up.
Container instances?
Yeah, versus the, you know, it kind of reminds me of when I'm sitting here waiting for a VM to build, even a super fast VM build, you're still talking 5 or 6 minutes, right? And now these container instances, right, boom, there's my, like, I'm like, I barely ran the PowerShell command and I can go do stuff.
Yeah, Azure Container Instances are really great. It's a really quick way to get started with container orchestration, and you can use Docker images, but fun fact, the backend is actually Kubernetes.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yep. So we actually, Dan and I were just at KubeCon last week, but so was a bunch of people, or 2 weeks ago, so were a bunch of people from Microsoft. And one of the big announcements during a KubeCon event was that we actually open sourced and released a project called Virtual Kubelet, which allows you pretty much to take that Virtual Kubelet and run it on any Kubernetes cluster, whether that's an Amazon, Google, Minikube, whatever you want. And you can essentially deploy out Azure Container Instances from wherever you put that Virtual Kubelet.
I'm trying to envision the stack. So we have a Microsoft product is probably a solution, probably the better word, because not really, you know, sell it in quite the same way we used to. You know, a Microsoft developed solution that sits on top of an open source product that you can then deploy on top of other clouds.
Yes.
Wow.
This is like, yeah,
for anybody who's listening, if you're curious, you can go on the GitHub and check it out. But it's literally, the GitHub link would be virtual-kubelet, C-U-B-E-L-E-T. And you can go read the how-to, how it works, everything. But you essentially can put it wherever you want. And it's completely open source. It supports Windows and Linux containers, volumes. You can do multiple containers per pods. It's pretty much allowing you to have access to Azure Container Instances. It allows nodes to be backed by Azure Container Instances or ACI from anywhere else.
So is an Azure Container Instance still an Azure Container Instance if it runs on somebody else's cloud?
Yes, because it's still deploying into Azure. So you're still using the benefit of
Azure. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Neat. No, that's cool. Well, so I got to ask then, Jessica. So, I mean, you're sounding all about containers and Docker and Kubernetes. Like, you know, how long have you been with Microsoft? Is this kind of a new passion for you? Or if it's, you know, if you're new to Microsoft, did you ever imagine you would hire on with Microsoft to go, like, be passionate and be able to be passionate about containers and Dockers and Kubernetes?
So that's a great question. I have been around Microsoft since 2009, so however many years that is, but I started out as a vendor. I have formally been a full-time employee for Microsoft for almost 2 years. And the course, I guess, what is that, 7 or 8 years? In the course of 7 or 8 years, my professional career changed dramatically. And I started focusing a lot more on Linux and Mac and open source projects a few years ago prior to me joining Microsoft itself. And so when I was around as an MVP. I was actually a four-time Windows MVP, and I was the only Windows MVP I knew of that actually had 4 Apple certifications and 0 Microsoft certifications. In fact, I didn't get a Microsoft certification until like 2 months before I joined Microsoft.
Wow.
So my passion has always been around being effective when it came to technology and using whatever tool you need to be effective. If that meant Windows, let's use Windows. If that meant Linux, let's use Linux. If that meant Mac, let's use Mac. If you want to use an open source tool, great. If you want to use a SQL Server and you want to pay for a license, fine. Whatever you need to use for your business, how can we make that effective? So when I joined the team, specifically with having Linux and open source as a background, we, at the time, DevOps was still kind of...
nascency at that point for us, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was pretty new for Microsoft to really kind of start like diving into it. And so since a lot of the tools in the DevOps ecosystem already came from the Linux and open source world, I started learning it. And when I started realizing what it was at its core, it was everything I had already been passionate about throughout the entire time of my career. So I kind of started diving headfirst into it. I started diving into Docker and Swarm. And then everyone started, I mean, this was almost 2 years ago, and Kubernetes has been around for 3 years. So by that point, like into the first year, people started talking about Kubernetes very heavily. And I started kind of playing with that. And before I knew it, I went so far down the rabbit hole, and I had developed such a deep passion for how that took everything I was already passionate and knowledgeable about, but it made it easier and it made it more effective, and it allowed us to increase our productivity and allowed me to have even like more important demos to go talk about. And then I connected with more awesome people inside Microsoft. For those who don't know, Microsoft actually contributes to the upstream for Kubernetes. We contribute to right. Helm, we contribute to Brigade and Draft and all these big projects that are huge in the open source community and tie really well into that DevOps and container story. So my career was kind of like able to take that passion and dive headfirst.
Didn't Microsoft lead the, wasn't Microsoft the release team for Kubernetes 1.7, 1.8?
I believe so. And even outside of even DevOps and containers, I know in a study that was done by GitHub in 2016, in October of 2016, Microsoft was the leading contributor to open source projects.
Yeah, I remember that coming out. It's funny because we've talked about this on the show before when, so I've been doing Azure for like 10 years, right? Before it was even called Azure, I was doing it. And, you know, we talked about the podcast has been running for, what are we, Kale? We're at 210 episodes, so we're like 4 or 5 years, is that right? A lot. 4 years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Throw in a little bit of holidays here and there. I mean, we're like four and a half years. And we were around when we went from, it went from Windows Azure to Microsoft Azure. And we've often talked about, hey, that was a very important change because it signified a significant shift,
right? From thou shalt always use Windows, thou shalt always use, you know, the stuff that goes with Windows, to now it's like, you know what? Yeah, use Azure. We don't care what you bring. We don't care what you use. To your point, Jessica, right? Whatever makes you productive, yep. We want you to leverage our platform, our abilities to make yourself even more productive, because we do want you to pay us somewhere along the way. But if that means we contribute to open source, if that means we leverage, you know, and make other open source products easier to use, so be it. We're okay with that.
Exactly. And I think, like, especially from, I know, like, our perspective from Microsoft is that in our mind, all roads are going to lead to Azure anyway. So long as we make sure that every road you're on, every tool you're using, every app you're developing can be run in our ecosystem, can be run in Azure. And it's no longer just the Windows ecosystem, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any developer, any platform, like, you can use our stuff.
Yeah, one question I had as you guys were going along, and you guys are obviously experts in this area, but, like, you mentioned Helm a couple times, and maybe one of you could take just a few minutes and kind of give our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with that just like a 10,000-foot view of what's Helm's role in the world, and specifically maybe how Codefresh works with Helm to make it something better to use in these pipelines.
Absolutely. I'll sure. jump in and just give, like, a one sentence of what Helm kind of is, and then I'll let Dan jump in and explain how Kubernetes, or not Kubernetes, how Codefresh can tie into that with Kubernetes. Helm overall, you can kind of think of it like a package manager. If you come from, like, the Mac and open source kind of world, I usually tell people that Helm you can kind of think of it like homebrew for Kubernetes.
Awesome.
And then Dan, if you want to jump into it from there.
Yeah, exactly. So If you're building, like, cloud native applications, that means you're building microservices. You're using, you know, the best technology for each different service in your stack, and so you have, you know, multiple languages, which is one of the reasons that Docker is so useful. But at some point, you get to this stage where you look around and you say, well, gosh, I have, like, 55 different services that run my application. If a meteor hit my data center tomorrow, how long would it take me to get back up and running? Like, all of these things have, like, their own deployment strategies and their whole history and how the way that they talk to each other. How do I define my application in a way so that I can redeploy it when I need to? And how do I define it in a way so that an engineer can basically copy my whole stack for development purposes and make changes as needed? And that's what Helm solves. So I can define my application on a much deeper level than what you would get from just, like, you know, a replica set or something. I can say, these are all of my different services. These are the images that they use. This is how they talk to each other. This is how they're versioned, all of those kinds of things. And you basically can set that all up so that they have a sense of dependencies. So I can say, like, this one needs to start, and then this one needs to start, you know, those kinds of things. And when you do that, you basically get this awesome application portability. And there was a big question in the industry, I think, you know, probably go back a year, and there was a question of, like, well, how are we going to package up Kubernetes applications? And there are all these competing standards. And as Kubernetes sort of solidified as the container orchestrator to rule them all and take over the whole world, Helm is basically doing the same thing right now. And so what we do for Helm is, if you go into Codefresh, you can connect to any Kubernetes cluster. And we had this really fun experience with Jessica. We were working, she was over at the office, hanging out. We usually get together to talk Star Wars and Kubernetes.
It's always in that order, always Star Wars first.
And we had been working on an integration to deploy to Docker Swarm, which is sort of the de facto for Azure at the time. And I said, you know, we just released this thing for Kubernetes. If you have a cluster up and running in Azure, let's connect it and see what happens. And so within about 2 minutes, Jessica connected into Codefresh. And all of a sudden she could see, oh, well, here's all the services. Here's all the namespaces I have running. I can see all the images that are here. I can see their IP addresses, all this action. And then that's all exposed. Well, now what if I want to deploy a Helm application? Do I have to install Helm and fiddle with the command line? Well, no, Codefresh actually has, one, the public directory of basically all the Helm applications. And so if you wanted to install, like, Jira or something, you basically one click and it's deployed onto your Kubernetes cluster, like, instantly. which is super cool, and you can handle versioning. But for the DevOps process, the development process, Helm actually keeps track of versioning. And so if you define your application stack as a Helm chart, then you can deploy it onto your Kubernetes cluster, and CodeFresh is going to keep track of that. And you can actually go back and look at all the rollouts you've ever done and all the changes you've ever made to your entire application stack, and you can roll back to any of those previous states that are supported inside of Helm. So it gives you this really cool way of both deploying your application and providing portability and then doing rollbacks. But the last thing that's sort of the secret sauce of this, we were talking about like time optimization earlier. If I want to run my tests and have like a test of my entire stack, right? Because it's not just about testing whatever service I'm working on. It's about testing how it works with all, it's integration testing, right? How it works with all these other services. Well, Helm on CodeFresh basically will let me spin up an entire copy of my entire stack with all of its services. And so I can do that much deeper level of testing. And I basically have just a copy of my app that I can share with my team, get feedback on or work on. And one of the big advantages to that is that for an engineer, you basically get that instant feedback on any change you make that gives you like, oh, well, look, I can actually click into it and see what's running. I can see that it passed all my integration tests. I can see that Selenium tests work. I can see that performance tests are working, whatever. And so when I issue a pull request, well, that means that as someone doing the code review, no, I'm no longer in the situation of like, okay, I can see your change past unit tests. Now I'm going to look at like your style and stuff. And then it goes into like a staging server after that. And it finds out, you find out there's a problem. Well, that basically means like you just kind of wasted a code review. And that's actually like one of the most expensive steps, right? And if you have to fix something after that, it's really expensive. It's really time consuming. So yeah. By having your application as a Helm chart and spinning it up beforehand, you basically give all of that feedback instantly. And so you have a very smooth release process.
So it sounds like it does a lot of things around like management and being able, you mentioned the rollback aspects and those things, but like, is there also like the way I understand it from the way you described it, it's kind of like declarative a little bit, like we can describe our infrastructure there. I think a lot of similarity to like ARM templates, you know, that we have in Azure where we can build dependencies between resources and like script this whole thing in a template and then throw it at Azure and say, make that for me, please. Is that a similar thing? Like it's a declarative kind of model for that, or?
Yeah, I'd say that's a very good comparison. I haven't, Jessica would probably have a lot more experience with those templates, but one of the things that's different with Helm is that as you're developing your application, you can basically use variables inside of your chart. And so I can like swap out components on the fly automatically, you know, to test them.
That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah, I'd like to thank Jessica, you and Dan, because you've now just filled my head with more open source software that I wasn't aware of previously. I spend most of my time in like deep in the bowels of the Azure platform these days. And you know, so I just thought I was just getting caught up on containers and Dockers and Kubernetes, and now I'm way behind again. Thanks. I really appreciate that.
That's the cool thing about technology is how rapid it goes, but how like with each, like every minute, it seems like sometimes there's something new, but there's also so much more you can do with it. So like anytime I think I'm caught up and then I don't know, pull up Twitter and I'm like, oh, wait, nope, never mind. I'm retired now because I don't know anything anymore.
Yeah, great. Well, we'll definitely, what we'll have to do, Dan, we'll definitely get you to put some links out, and Jessica, you know, get you to put some on our site as well for our audience, right? It sounds like you guys got some cool things you can point them to, and Dan, definitely put your you know, your CodeFresh links out there as well.
Yeah, one thing to jump in there, Evan, on that was, Dan, maybe you can just take a second, and for our listeners, how can they take advantage of CodeFresh? Like, what's the process? How can they, you know, start using this stuff?
Oh, yeah, great question. So CodeFresh.io is our website. We have a really generous free tier. You basically, I think you get 120 builds a month for free. We have a free private Docker registry where you can throw all your stuff into. We have free built-in environments. So you can actually spin up your application on demand on our own R&R infrastructure. So that's the base entry that's very easy and accessible for people, and you can connect your Kubernetes clusters and all that stuff. That's all included. Then we do have like a pro version where you can get like Docker daemon access. That's kind of our enterprise offering. And then we actually, this is kind of a little inception for you, but Codefresh itself is actually built on top of Kubernetes and Helm. And so you can actually, if you're like a, if you're an enterprise company, you need to run Codefresh on-prem, you can actually take our Helm chart and deploy it yourself as well. So we have that choice of, you can let us take care of infrastructure, or you can install it on your own infrastructure and run it yourself and take on, you know, answer some security stuff or whatever. So those are the big, that's the intro for how you jump in.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I'm assuming by your, when you talk about their on-premises infrastructure, we are talking Azure VMs, right? I mean, this is the Azure podcast here, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jessica, actually you could speak to this, but you give a lot of demos, right? And maybe you could tell, maybe share just super quick, like how you give the demos of Kubernetes, Azure, and Codefresh.
Yeah, so ultimately I have a Kubernetes cluster that lives in Azure. I also have an Azure Container Registry. And I have Docker files that I wrote. I can use the same Docker files, by the way, with VSTS. I've done a demo with that. I've believe done the same demo with Jenkins. I do a variety of different, throw a Docker file at me, throw whatever you need, and we can get it running on whatever service. And I don't care what CI/CD tool you use, but the same demo that I would do, say, with VSTS, we tried to do with Codefresh. That was the talk that we were, when I was in their office. So I have a demo where I show how easy it is to get started with Kubernetes and Codefresh on YouTube. I can throw the link in.
Yeah, please do. Up here.
So you can see that. But ultimately, it's just taking Docker file and then a deployment YAML file, which actually, if you do it the way that I'm demoing in the YouTube, you don't even have to have the deployment YAML file. If you want to go manually create, there's a demo chat app that Codefresh wrote, and it relies on a MongoDB database, and then it's a Node.js chat application on the front side. And you can go deploy the Mongo database first, and then go, and you just deploy it as a service. And it's a little GUI interactive. And then if you want to then go deploy a second service for the chat app, little GUI interactive, and then spin it up, it'll automatically spin up and deploy to your Kubernetes cluster on Azure. And it'll pull those images that you give it from your Azure Container Registry. So that's the demo that I have in YouTube. If you wanted to also use a deployment YAML file or even Helm chart, you can do that. I don't have any of those demos recorded yet, but that is on my list of things to do.
In between picking up all the new open source things that we were talking about on the Twitter.
Yeah, in between, I feel like I just need a direct feed into my brain of every new announcement and update. But yeah, I've definitely planned to. What I try to do in all of my demos is make them recyclable. So you can recycle it and use it in your own kind of environment to kind of learn. If you want to go learn with VSTS, Jenkins, Azure, Codefresh, whatever cloud provider, and then come back to Azure because we're cool. I just try to educate people on open source Kubernetes, the proper way to do things in DevOps when it comes down to your pipeline through your build and your release. I have a few links that we can send people to specifically showing how to do that when it comes to Kubernetes, Azure, and then DevOps.
Yeah, no, that's great. We'll definitely get you to share that with the audience. Kale, any last questions for Dan and Jessica? Or if not, we'll kind of let them get back their time at this point.
No, this is great. I really appreciate you guys coming on and talking about this, educating our listeners on both Codefresh and the Kubernetes and what Microsoft's doing in that space. So really appreciate you guys taking the time.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.